Welcome to LPI on Health, a podcast series to inform you about the recent micronutrient research and events coming out of the Linus Pauling Institute at Oregon State University. For more information, visit our website at lpi.oregonstate.edu. Hi, this is Naomi Hirsch, and it's been an honor for me this week to bring the current research from the Diet and Optimum Health Conference to you with this podcast. We hope it connects you both to the science and the scientists behind the research. This week, Dr. Mark Levine from the National Institute of Diabetes and Digestive and Kidney Diseases at the National Institutes of Health gave a presentation on intravenous vitamin C and cancer therapy. The next day, Dr. Levine was presented with the Linus Pauling Prize for Health Research. He is the fourth recipient of this prestigious award. In his acceptance speech, he shared highlights of his career and research and his connection to Linus Pauling, which was a highlight of this conference. I found a quiet moment to sit down with him so he could share with you a bit about his motivation, research, and next steps.
My name is Mark Levine. I went to a large public high school in Brooklyn, New York City. I went to Brandeis University and was lucky enough to go to Harvard Medical School. And then I trained as in internal medicine at Johns Hopkins Hospital.
Why don't you share how valuable your research is related to cancer?
Well, cancer work, I can't say about value or not because I don't know the answer. The work that we started with cancer was an accident. It came out of our studies in healthy people where we were trying to learn about absorption. And we realized in doing absorption studies that different ways of giving vitamin C produced very different kinds of concentrations. Normally, the body makes sure that vitamin C is kept in a fairly narrow range as long as you eat enough that would be, or as long as you eat amounts that would be found in five or more varied servings of fruits and vegetables. So the ways that our bodies do this is different than the way our bodies control glucose, but the end result is the same. Healthy humans who don't have diabetes keep glucose concentrations within about a range of twofold. And for ascorbic acid, vitamin C, once we eat our five fruits and vegetables, our bodies keep our vitamin C concentrations in our blood within a twofold range at the most. We realize by accident when vitamin C is not eaten but given by vein that could subvert or bypass these ways that your body normally will handle vitamin C, and huge concentrations can be produced over a period of hours. And then the body's mechanisms make sure that the vitamin C comes back down to the ranges that we were designed to have. Why is this of interest? Well, the accident was that we read and realized that the old cancer studies done by Ewan Cameron and that were joined by Linus Pauling used both intravenous and oral vitamin C, that studies that try to look at this problem objectively of whether vitamin C would be useful for cancer used only oral vitamin C. People who did those studies and the medical community concluded that vitamin C had no value for cancer treatment, but those studies to test whether vitamin C would work used only oral vitamin C. No one realized this difference, and the reason that we realized this big difference was because we were studying how vitamin C was handled when it was given either by mouth or into the vein. But originally it was not for cancer studies that we were doing our experiments. It was simply an accident of doing science. Sometimes things like that happen in science, that there are unexpected results, and one has to be prepared to go the next steps when one gets something that's different than is expected. So we thought this was worth learning more about whether vitamin C given intravenously could produce very high concentrations enough to kill cancer cells. The principles that are under this are actually very simple for me as a physician. They are because frequently we give drugs intravenously simply because we get higher amounts of the drug than if we give them orally. It's something that as a physician I'll do every day when I'm working as a physician, many times a day, to give intravenous drugs. But this difference for ascorbic acid, vitamin C, had not been realized, I think simply because the information wasn't there. So the reason that I think it really is necessary to keep going is, again, something that we learned by accident. That is that intravenous vitamin C continues to be used widely now by complementary and alternative medicine practitioners, very widely. So there's something to be learned, no matter whether vitamin C, ascorbic acid, given intravenously, works for cancer or not. My hope is that it would do something for some patients with cancers, but science doesn't work by hope. It works by truth and data. So if we find that ascorbic acid is useful even for one kind of cancer when it's given intravenously, the vitamin C, that's wonderful. But let's say that ascorbic acid intravenously really doesn't have any benefit. Well, that's important to know too, because then we can tell the practitioners who are using this that there's no point, that they should stop, that they should not provide false hope, and they shouldn't give the wrong idea to patients. So either way, there's a benefit. Either way, we learn. And science really should be done for truth as best as we can do.
That's good. And you mentioned Linus Pauling, the impact.
Well, Linus Pauling had joined you and Cameron's efforts probably 30-plus years ago in trying to learn whether ascorbic acid had a role in cancer treatment. If he had not done this, then there wouldn't be more to follow, and I wouldn't be pursuing this because there wouldn't be a base. Science really evolves ultimately in small steps, and what we are doing really has its basis from 60, 70 years ago. That basis is at least, and that is when vitamins were discovered years and years ago, 70, 80 years ago, investigators wanted to know what was ideal. And they didn't have the tools then. And we've had to take small steps because tools haven't been available or interest has been lost or scientific opinion has shifted. But what we are doing is really just a continuum. Linus Pauling was part of that continuum, and he was an important part of it. But it's we're simply building on what was done before.
Yeah, that's good. The only other question is next steps. It sounds like you want to study more about the impact.
So for next steps, there's the way that a standard cancer drug would be evaluated. And then there's the way forward, I think, for ascorbic acid. And I don't think they're the same. A standard cancer drug has to be evaluated for mechanism, for safety, before it can ever reach a person. And there should be mechanism in cells, there should be safety in animals before it reaches a person. Many of these drugs have bad side effects. Ascorbic acid seems to be different. We already know mechanism, or at least have a sense of mechanism. Safety data are not, there aren't a lot of them, but there's what I call public use, that there have been thousands and thousands and thousands of patients who have already received intravenous ascorbic acid. In fact, there are many, many, many people who have received this. If there were side effects from giving that ascorbic acid, they should have been reported. We should have seen some evidence of toxicity. And it doesn't appear that there is danger as long as patients are properly screened. And we know how to screen patients. Do formal safety data need to be published? Yes. But because of this track record, my opinion, not NIH's opinion, but my own opinion, is that we should proceed forward now because we have something that appears to be safe and it might work. So my goal is to try to work with oncologists to design studies where we can test ascorbic acid under carefully selected conditions for patients. An example of this might be patients who have aggressive cancers where we have some evidence, either from the laboratory or from animals, that their cancers might be sensitive to ascorbic acid, that these patients are in relatively decent shape, and that if they don't have anything done, that they're not going to be around too much longer. These would be the ideal kinds of patients to test. There are certainly scientific ways to narrow down these kinds of patients, and my goal is to try to move this forward. Ultimately, there are times, many times in medicine, where we use drugs. I wear two hats, so I'm a scientist and a clinician. So as a clinician, I wear a hat where I use drugs where I sometimes don't know how they work, but I know that the drugs work and that the benefit outweighs the risk. That's what it's all about in medicine. The benefit outweighs the risk. So if I can find one kind of cancer with help where there's some benefit, I think the risk is going to be low. Do I know that? No. Do I think it's worth going forward? Absolutely. We will do animal studies if that's what's necessary to move things forward. But I think the real money is going to be in patients. Nude mice are not clothed people, or people in any way. Things have to be done in people. We've used aspirin and acetaminophen each for over close to 100 years or maybe more. And for at least 90 years for each of those compounds, we didn't know exactly how they worked. We still use them because there was benefit, and the benefit outweighed risk. So that's our goal, is to ask, is there benefit? If we learn about risk, we have to factor that in. So far, we think that the potential benefit justifies moving ahead.
That's great. It's great for the public to hear. Chair, anything else you'd like to share?
For me, science has always been an adventure. I consider myself a scientist first. At least that's what I love. Going to medical school was an accident for me, only that I wanted to learn science. What happened along the way was another accident, and that accident was that I found that I really liked being a doctor, and I feel very fortunate that I've been able to marry these two wonderful careers that I tell my family every day how lucky I am that I like going to work. I love what I do, and I'll continue doing it until something happens where I don't like it anymore.
That's great.
Thanks for tuning in. On behalf of everyone at the Linus Pauling Institute, we wish you optimum health. Have an awesome day.